recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
What a way to start, huh?
Now, I'd like you to meet my staff. Send the gentleman in, would you? General Robert E. Lee. General Ulysses S. Grant. George Washington. Abraham Lincoln. Pocahontas. Daniel Boone. Theodore Roosevelt. Benjamin Franklin.
Tang, walla walla, bing bang.
All right!
I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He said that...
Four tufts of feathers from a falcon. I got them from a pigeon. Sand from Egypt. I still had some in my sneakers from Jones Beach. Three legs of a spider. I found me an ant. Well, anyway, that with a few improvisations, I got me a spell working here. Zazazoom. Alakazam. Oh, man. What do they think I am? William Shakespeare? Younger, Tony Curtis. I give you Tony Curtis.
I appreciate it.
So now he's champion of the world, but he's made a promise to his girl never to fight again. You know, like a vow. Vow, Mr. Hugo. That's like a promise. I mean, like solemn. And now, Mr. Hugo, comes the meat. This is what grabs you right here. Now, he's got a fight, but he promised his girl. And when he tells her he's got a fight, she's aghast. I mean, this broad is palpitating. She calls a champion a filthy, rotten, dirty...
She's adamant. Is that what you mean?
Thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed, you laughed, and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
coming to take us away. Ha ha ho ho hee hee to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time. Oh my God, I used to love that song. Hello everybody, welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. And I want to welcome our special guests today. We have Bear Fan Ron. And we have someone from our Yahoo group, Son. I am so glad you made it, Son. Good to see you here. We have Rick Wall. And we have Lou. Woo! We got a full house today. And, of course, I have my co-hosts with me, Robert, Bobby, and Dave. Hello, folks. Hello, everybody.
Hello. You know what they say about me.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yes, sir. I'm here.
I love that song. Coming to take us away. Well, they might take us away after this episode. But, yeah, well, I hope everybody's having a good weekend with all that crazy snow. Robert, you're in Ohio. How's the snow been for you guys? We've had a ton of it.
Yeah, we got about another inch or two here, but... they're talking about Thursday, 60-degree weather, so looking forward to that.
Yeah, Friday, I think either tomorrow or, no, wait, this is
Tuesday, probably, because
Tuesday,
we get it is Tuesday.
Yeah, we're supposed to go up in the 50s, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, somewhere around there. We're supposed to go up in the 50s to 52 degrees.
Yep.
Oh, I'm so sick of snow, I can't even tell you how sick I am of snow. It's been like one year. This is the worst winter I remember in a long time. I mean, in years. Temperature-wise and snow-wise, it's been horrible. So I've never wished for spring as much as I have the past couple of months. It's just been awful. And I have a cold, by the way. So if I have to mute myself every now and then to cough, please excuse me for that. But I have a cold, which is starting to go away, but I still have it. So anyway, I'm just glad to see everybody here. And Ron, what are you saying? Thanks for the welcome. You'll be back and forth, but you're listening. Where are you going? What do you mean you're going to be back and forth? What are you? Just leaving and coming back? You're here. You're stuck here now. You must stay.
You're in the funny farm.
That's right.
No.
Remember Hotel California? You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. You are here, Bear Fan. But anyway, today we are finally, oh my God, we're finally at the end of season 4.
Hey.
Yeah.
And the crowd went wild.
Confetti and champagne for everyone. End of season 4 hour long, horrible episodes. And, of course, it had to end on one of the worst possible notes, one of the worst episodes of the entire Twilight Zone. It is called The Bard. The Bard. And I am going to turn it over to... my dear friend, Roberto, for the opening clip to The Bard.
Here we go.
And now, Mr. Serling. You've just witnessed opportunity. If not knocking, at least scratching plaintively on a closed door. Mr. Julius Moomer, a would-be writer, who, if talent came 25 cents a pound, would be worth less than car fare. But in a moment, Mr. Moomer, through the offices of some black magic... is about to embark on a brand new career. And although he may never get a writing credit on The Twilight Zone, he's to become an integral character in it.
Okay. If you say so.
If you say so.
Whatever you say, Rod.
Sorry, you are incorrect.
We've got a bumbling screenwriter. And a great name, Julius K. Moomer. Moomer is in desperate need of brilliant scripts, and his agent suggests that he do some research. So he finds a book with a black magic spell, and he uses it to bring William Shakespeare to life. And Shakespeare produces a riveting screenplay for the writer. But he's so horrified at the revisions by the sponsor that he assaults the leading man, storms out for good, and he's gone. So then Moomer's next assignment, a TV special on American history, that seems doomed to failure until Moomer says, oh, wait a minute, that book on black magic, and then he uses it to conjure up a new writing staff. Robert E. Lee, Ulysses S. Grant, Abe Lincoln, George Washington, Pocahontas, Samuel Boone, Ben Franklin, and Teddy Roosevelt. Oh, my God. You know, it's widely believed, and I think Rod even made some mention of this, that this episode was likely written by him as a reaction to the advertising executives that he dealt with regularly while producing for television. I mean, he constantly butted heads with them. They were always interfering in his work. And
I wonder how he'd think of studio execs today.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Or network execs. I'm sorry.
Network execs, exactly. Oh, you know, this episode actually was featured in the final episode of the 2007 season of The Sopranos. And the episode of The Sopranos was called Made in America. Tony Soprano, he's seen watching this episode while he's hiding from his enemies in the safe house. So they actually had this episode in showing in The Sopranos. But as far as I'm concerned, you know what? This episode should not have been called The Bard. It should have been called The Barf. The Barf. Because that's what it made me want to do. That's without a doubt one of the crappiest episodes of the entire series. It's so bad that makes the other TZ comedies look like masterpieces. And you know
Brady
what?
Brady Hurley, you yes. smell just like flowers.
Hey, you know what? You know what? There is only... Hi, Felix. Hey, Felix is here. Hi, Felix. But you know what? There's only one good thing to be said for this episode. It marks the end of the hour-long episodes. Woo! It's over. They're done. You got a former streetcar conductor. All of a sudden, he thinks he can be a writer. He's going to pull off a series about black magic. He doesn't know anything about the subject. What the hell? You know, then he figures, you know, he'll simply research it. And I love the name of the book, everybody. Ye Book of Ye Black Art. Oh, real clever. Real clever. And that's when the stupidity begins, and it just keeps accelerating throughout the whole episode. It gets William Shakespeare, conjures him up. And he's going to help Julius Moomer write this pilot. Oh, that in itself was idiotic. You know, absolutely ridiculous. And then it gets worse and worse. And then Burt Reynolds shows up. He's this Marlon Brando knockoff, I guess. And he was okay, but the name Rocky Rhodes?
No, James Darren knockoff.
There you go. James. No, James Dean. James
Dean. Yes, James
yes.
Dean. That's
James
what I meant.
Dean.
Yeah.
James Dean knockoff, right.
Yeah.
With a horrible name, Rocky Rhodes. I mean, come on. And the dialogue was laughable. It was laughable and not in a funny way. And the little girl, Cora, she was totally annoying. Her dialogue was the worst of all. But as far as I can see, Rod Serling, he wrote this episode mostly as a huge deal. You get the network brass. They constantly censored and interfered with his work. And that's fine, as far as I'm concerned. I'm all for Rod getting back at those brass holes. You know, he got back at the brass holes. But it's a shame he had to resort to such a horrendous story to do so. And I don't know if anybody noticed, but there was one inside joke in this. And I didn't notice it until I'd seen it a few times when Moomer talks about expanding one of his failed shows from a half hour to an hour, just as the network did with The Zone. So that was sort of fitting since the series resumed its half hour format in season 5. Jack Weston, he was a good actor, but he was much better in The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. John Williams, another fine actor, didn't belong in this piece of trash. And luckily, all the actors in this travesty, including Burt Reynolds, went on to much better things. And the music, oh, that's my last comment. The music in this episode was just plain awful. So I give it, wow, big, 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 big zero. And Felix gives it a negative one. There you go. Negative one from Felix and a zero from me. And over, oh, electronic salam. You can't hear any voice? I'm sorry. Something must be wrong there on your end, because we do have audio here. anyone might want to try getting out and, well, what am I talking about?
He won't be hearing you.
He won't hear me. Well, maybe I'll type in there, go out and come back in again. But Robert, I'm going to go over to you.
Thank you, Lynn. Yeah, at last we're at the final episode, as Lynn said. We've all persevered through the episodes that were average, crappy, one or two that were excellent, and then you're rewarded with this piece of poo. We get this retread piece of crap, and you wonder to yourself, was season four really worth your energy and time just to get to season five? So, I mean, one good point, as Lynn says, at least we're out of the hour episodes and we start going back into the 30-minute format, which I'm very much looking forward to as well. But unfortunately, I feel this story was very lackluster, to be honest about it. And, you know, we have Julius that, you know, is looking for that one big break, and he wears down, you know, his agent with a bunch of cockamamie story ideas, basically the same idea with various themes, until he finally gives in and, you know, gives him a chance. Then, of course, he decides to do some research, Lynn said, and then we get the genie in the bottle storyline, or the episode The Mind and the Matter from season three. Also, we get his own from season one. And now Julius is doing black magic in his apartment, and he's casting a spell. And my question, since we got Rick here, I wanted to ask you, Rick, when there's such things as spell casting, don't you have to be precise in the ritual and the pronunciation? Or at least
Yeah, you do. There's a great scene in Army of Darkness, if you've ever seen the movie.
Favorite movie of mine, definitely.
Okay.
In an age of darkness.
May God have mercy upon your souls.
Something's wrong. Something's amiss.
And a time of evil.
You shall die!
When the world needed a hero.
The swallow our souls. I don't want to die!
What it got was him.
Groovy. You know your shoelace is untied.
He's a 20th century guy.
For that arrogance, I shall see you dead.
Trapped. In the Middle Ages.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up. This is my boomstick!
Now, let's talk about how I get back home.
Foretold by a mystical book.
Within its pages are passages that can send you back to your time.
Forewarned by a wise man.
You must recite the words Klaatu Berata Nictu.
I got it!
Fulfilled by a wise guy.
Klaatu Berata Nictu!
When the army spoke the words, the army of the dead awoke.
You remember when Ash goes and gets the Necronomicon?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to say, Barada Nikto. Klaatu Barada Nikto. And he's going, Klaatu Barada. You remember what happened, right? Well, yeah.
Yep.
You gotta do it as close as to the word as possible. But there is a little leeway, but not much. I mean, if there's a component that says, you know, you need, say, a walnut, you need a walnut. You don't put in a cashew or a peanut. And that's what he did. You know, he said, oh, here's a chicken feather or whatever it was.
Or an ant instead of a spider.
Right.
That's three spider legs, yeah. Put an ant in there.
Yeah. No, you can't do that.
I figured that much.
Yeah, that's what Willow used to do when spells went wrong in Buffy. They said these newt's eggs were fresh, or newt's eyes, or whatever they were.
Or those Hammer horror movies with the Edgar Allan Poe, where I think it was the Raven movie, where, you know, the Eye of Newt and all that stuff, where Vincent Price was trying to get the ants together and mix, but that's Hollywood, to be honest about it.
Yep.
But so secondly, you know, this felt much like an episode that should have been on Bewitched. Aaron has an advertiser who wants a sales campaign for a product, and back at home Samantha has some kind of sickness or something like that. Or we could put Aunt Claire in there where she conjures up some historical figure from the past.
Because they did that a lot in Bewitched. They used to bring people back from the past. Remember, they brought Andrew Jackson, they brought George Washington. Yeah, they brought people back from the past in Bewitched.
Yeah.
I
got a quick example of that right here.
What are you doing?
Trying to fix this lamp, but I think I've got it wired wrong.
Oh, dear, now do be careful. Electricity is a very tricky thing with all the watts and the ohms and the I'll call an electrician.
Oh, no. Don't bother, Aunt Clara. Darren will look at it when he gets home. I'm going to go take a look at Tabitha. You just relax. Wait till you see how she's grown.
Yes. Yes. No bother. No bother at all. Hark ye, hark ye, ye witches who live in lamps, ye powers of watts and ohms and amps, wizards of AC-DC transmission, send to me an electrician.
Benjamin Franklin at your service, madam.
Oh. Samantha, the electrician's arrived. Here's the lamp, Mr. Franklin.
Madam, who are you? What manner of contraption is that?
It's an ordinary lamp, and we want you to fix it.
Excuse me, madam. Who are you?
Who are you?
Benjamin Franklin, madam, at your service, but I...
Benjamin Franklin? Aunt Clara, what have you done?
Ladies, I fear you have the advantage. You seem to recognize me, yet I don't know you or where I am, or for that matter, how I came to be here.
And voila, you get Benjamin Franklin. And I like him to fix a lamp.
They did that a lot.
Yeah. And thirdly, what happened with Shakespeare? Does he become a famous writer again, a writing hack, or living on the streets because he cannot accept rewrites of his original work?
Yeah, he just took off.
Yeah, just took off and went wherever. Also, I felt that the Burt Reynolds character was wasted. Anybody could have filled that Rocky Road character in the story.
Rocky Road. I cannot believe they used that name.
It sounds like ice cream or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yes.
You get in the store. All in all, the big, boring snooze fest. And, you know, normally, I usually give a 1 as my lowest for, you know, at least giving an effort to get it on the Twilight Zone. But, unfortunately, this is my first one ever that I give this a 0 out of 5. But let's keep our fingers crossed for a better last season for the Twilight Zone, which is coming up. So with that, I'll pass it over to Bobby. Bobby, all yours.
Well, you can keep your fingers crossed and your toes crossed, but you're not going to get much out of season 5, that's for sure. This actually is my favorite episode of the hour-long episodes, not simply because the obvious reason that's the end of the season, but because it puts the definitive ending on this season and gives the final stamp of disapproval onto what they did. It's so horribly bad that I wouldn't have had it any other way, quite frankly. I would have really been very disappointed had they somehow come up with a classic episode, near classic episode at the end, because I want people to remember that season for exactly what it was. And we live in a kind of world, what have you done for me lately world, where people remember the last thing they saw, not the first thing they saw. And so if I were talking to anybody about the show who had never seen it, I would say, look, if you really want to know how bad it turned, just look at the last episode. It tells you everything you need to know. It's been going on since it started, and it just doesn't stop until the very end. Now, you know, everybody says it's very easy to say that the problem with the Twilight Zone at this point is that they decided to go to hour episodes, and I certainly have said enough about that to indicate my disapproval of that. However, and I know Lynn is going to hate hearing this, The real problem is that the show is simply out of gas, and it just is. It just doesn't have anything to give anymore. I know we've got two all-time classic episodes coming up, but that doesn't make a season, and that's the problem with this show. It simply has done the best it can do. It doesn't have anything in the tank anymore. And you can't make something out of nothing. When you're out of ideas, you're out of ideas. When our board at our group this past week, or 2 weeks ago, whenever, we reviewed an episode from season 5 that's an exact duplicate of one that was done a couple seasons earlier. Serling simply
wrote
Probe
7.
He simply wrote the same story and just changed the locale, and it was an insult to people as if to say, oh, you don't remember that one, do you? I think I'll just write it again. I think Rod Serling really kind of had diminished interest in the series after a while. I think he was just, it was getting to the point where he just didn't have anything much to give anymore. And if I'd been the head of CBS at that time, when the season ended especially, I would have called him into my office and said, look, you know, we really appreciate what you've done, and it's a classic series. People will talk about it forever, and we're very proud to have had it on CBS, but just between you and me, you got nothing to give anymore. And all you're doing is trashing your own series. There's no point in it. I would have pulled the plug on it, because I think it, you know, would have been a shame not to get Nightmare 20,000 Feet and Living Doll, my two favorite episodes, but, you know, you got to sit through the whole season to get that. We're going to go through this again when we get to the end of season 5. Absolutely dreadful at the end of season 5. If anything, those half-hour episodes are even worse than this. And it's just a shame. It's a shame because I think that a season like we've just been through kind of hurts the legacy of this series. And I'm reminded, because it was just a few weeks ago, we had the Super Bowl. And Peyton Manning was being called by all of the experts possibly the greatest quarterback who ever played football, because a lot of them expected him to win the Super Bowl. Well, if he wins, how can you deny it? He just had a record-setting year, and I'd have to say he's the greatest quarterback who ever lived. But it turns out he had a bad game in the Super Bowl, and his team had a bad game. And it was amazing. Right afterwards, nobody was saying that anymore. Oh, well, I don't know now. Maybe he's not the greatest quarterback who ever lived. Maybe he will be if he comes back next year, if he doesn't retire, and he wins next year. And that's the kind of thing you're up against. So I think it doesn't ruin the legacy of Twilight Zone, but it hurts because it stands out like a sore thumb. It's just there. And you can't ignore it, although the cable channels certainly ignore it. Sci-Fi Channel, MeTV, and any other channels who have presented the Twilight Zone over the years never, ever, ever present the hour-long episodes. It's like they don't even exist. And there's no reason for that, because they could easily make room for an hour episode. They're changing the schedule every few months. But they just don't do them. They didn't buy them to show. They're not interested in it at all. And that says a lot about it right there. But you can't just pretend it wasn't there. It's like, you know, having a great family and having a bad uncle who's a child molester and a drug addict and an alcoholic. You just don't talk about him, but he's still a member of the family.
Syndication doesn't work that way, Bobby. When you buy a series, you buy the series.
Okay, well, they're not showing them.
True.
Yeah, I don't care whether they bought it or not. They're not on. They're just not there. And every time they just recently cranked up the series again, they're starting to show things from the very beginning. They showed Time Enough at last night. And, you know, as it goes along, when we get to this season, it'll be, oh, no, well, we'll show that some other day. And I think that says a lot about it. So I just think it's a pity that such a fabulous series kind of gets a little bit tarnished by this. Yeah, it gets over. It doesn't take away what it did before. Those first three seasons are quite remarkable. I mean, there were some bad episodes there, too, but overall it was really great. But you get to this, the dreadful idea. Whoever had the idea to put it into an hour is just absolutely unbelievable. Obviously, somebody who had no concept of what it was. And they're just, you know, just kind of out of ideas. It's easy for me to sit here, because I'm not a professional writer, and say, you know what, you got to keep coming up with great ideas. But you can't. And especially when you do really, really great stories, really intense stories, as the hour gets later and later and later, it just gets worse and worse and worse. I don't have anything to say about this thing, because I tried to watch it again the other day. The last time I watched it was when we did our reviews, which I guess were months ago. And I tried to watch it, but after 15 minutes, I simply started to fall asleep, so I just turned it off. It's impossible to even stay awake during it. It's just so completely ridiculous. And I can't imagine what people were thinking back then when they saw it. And even worse yet, although I personally am glad that it was the last episode of the season, that's no way to end the season. You've got to get through the summer, and you've got to convince people to come back in the winter to your show. Do you really want to leave them with this kind of memory? Are you serious? I mean, anybody watching the series would say, that's the last episode of the series this year? Oh, my. There's no point in me coming back. So it's almost a miracle that it did come back. But it's just a pity. Yeah, thank goodness it's over with, and we're getting into season five, and we've got two incredible classics. I mean, the two classics coming up are in my all-time top 10, top five. So I can't wait to get to them, but there's an awful lot of bad stuff in season five, especially when it gets to the end, and it's just kind of a shame. As far as numbers are concerned for this episode, I can't give it any kind of number. I would just give it P for pitiful and pathetic, and just leave it at that. It's just, it ends the season and on the right note, because if it had been a classic episode, everybody would say, you know, why it wasn't that bad after all? Maybe it really wasn't that bad, but yeah, it really was that bad. And all you got to do is take one look at this, and you get the message. All I can say is thank you, dear Lord, that the agony is finally over. Lynn, back to you.
Okay, Dave.
Well, I just rewatched it. In fact, I didn't get to the end, so I can't really comment on the part. I only got it as far as just after Burt Reynolds shows up. Season 4, of course, episode 120, aired May 23rd, 1963. Yes, it was out of character with the Twilight Zone. Should it have been in the Twilight Zone? That's highly debatable. But I think, as we were talking just prior to the recording, most science fiction stories usually have one sort of Joker episode. I mean, even as Robert will know, in the TV series Merlin that was on, in the UK, they'd have at least one, what they would call a comic one. I mean, they had one with a goblin that made people pass wind, and they did other silly things, so that they always had sort of one sort of, you know, and the reason they did that was because the couple that were likely to get together were likely to get together, so they had an embarrassing episode to really sort of move things apart, literally and emotionally. That's beside the point.
I was glad when they got out of the castle finally there.
Yeah. But, I mean, like I was saying before we started recording, with the first Star Trek with the, you know, Trouble with Tribbles and the I Mud type of characters with the merchant. Now, at least they weren't trying to pass this off as great drama, and it wasn't great drama. The clues
but
were all
they were
the
great comedies.
Yeah, exactly.
They were good comedies. They worked.
Right. Well, with this, there was an awful lot of comedy music in it, and they were sort of, it was clear, I mean, all the messages there.
Yeah, but come on.
Well, I'll let you go next. Well, Lynn may let you go next, Rick Wall, but let me just finish if I may. First of all, if you want comedy, I thought Jack Weston, who played the main character, I thought he's got great comic timing. The last thing I remember seeing him was Dirty Dancing, where he played the owner of the holiday place, and he's been lots of other things. But I thought his performance was rather good. The chap who played William Shakespeare, I mean, those leggings didn't do him any justice at all. Of course, I remember him as the policeman from Dial M for Murder from 1954, and he is a very good actor, but he had a really difficult thing to try and pull off there. One other thing, it should the young girl that played Cara, Judy
Stranger.
Yeah, it's nice to see a Twilight episode where somebody was in it is younger than me now. So that's rather good. She's only, I think she's 64 now. So it's rather nice to have a episode where the actors are younger than me. There was, the thing I can't say about it, which was repeated quite often during the course of the story, was they kept going, it's solid, it's solid. Well, this wasn't a solid episode. And how do you like those apples was really, how do you like those onions? He was taking a poke at the advertisers, he was taking a poke at the executives, as already been said. And really, he was cocking a hoop at them. Maybe, just maybe, he was hoping they wouldn't renew him back to come back in September if he was so tired out. I mean, he was certainly risking a lot. The comment that was made earlier about, you know, they started to repeat the stories. Well, I think they've done that all along. That's one of the common threads that I've said in many of these Talking Twilight Zone episodes, that he always does the reverse coin story. You know, in one way it breaks one way, and he always does the mirror image. Oh, mirror came again in this. How many shows have we seen it where, you know, the whole idea is that we've actually not got an ordinary mirror, but we've got a warped, our cracked, our distorted mirror held up to reality. And that, again, was how he first sees William Shakespeare. He doesn't look at him. He does this trick again of him seeing him in the mirror. I thought his fainting scene, by the way, was one of the funniest fainting scenes I've ever seen. I thought it was excellent. Going on to Burt Reynolds, that was a pastiche, wasn't it? I mean, he was... when they kept saying... somebody said, he was in Streetcar Named Desire, which, of course, was a Marlon Brando film. And he was... I thought he was doing more Marlon Brando. I could have been a contender. And, you know, what's my... I mean, the James Dean as well. Like, what's my motivation for walking through the door? You know, how do I open the door? You know, does the door want me to open it? Shall I walk through the door? You know what I mean? I mean, that was a skit on... Maybe it was a skit again. He was having to go at some of the actors he'd had to work with over the previous season. So, basically, you could argue that... he didn't care a toss who he annoyed in this episode, Rod Sterling. And so he was cocking a hoop at them all. So, and it was definitely an odd episode. Definitely, I wouldn't like more than one episode of this frippery per season. I think the placement was, again, I absolutely agree with Bobby on that. The placement of this is the last episode series seemed somewhat strange, unless, of course, maybe being told it wasn't coming back. 6 or 7 weeks prior to recording this, maybe he thought this actually was going to be the last episode. Maybe there was no expectation that there would be another series, and so he thought, well, I'll stick a one with this then. But just to sort of sugarcoat it a little, I'll make it more of a humour. But anybody who knows me, all the insiders will know that when I stick that oar in, I really want to stick that oar in. So I think this is one of those things that if I knew a little bit more of the background of what went on behind, I think some of the things that were on screen would perhaps take on a more macabre meaning, a different meaning. But on the face of it, to the viewer watching, strange that this was the last episode. I think Jack Weston really carried the show pretty well. I think he's very strong in those sort of character parts, and he was the most watchable part of it. And I can't for any conscience give it a great score, but maybe say a 2 out of 5. Actually, if I knew a little bit more about the history of it, and if it was indeed a good social and comment, and I think as Rick Wallard said again prior to the recording, it was an insight into perhaps what goes on behind the scenes, it may actually deserve more credit for him in putting that out there. I mean, the one last thing, and I don't know about this season not being shown in America a lot, because I'm based in the UK. But why don't they, if they haven't got the permission, why can't they seek the permission to get somebody to re-edit these? Because there's so much padding, as has been said often by people here. You could literally take a knife to 14 or 15 of these 18 episodes and come up with a reasonably, cogent story form, much tighter, that they could go into a 20, maybe a 23 or 4 minute time slot, and air it that way. Maybe the cost is not worth it. Maybe, you know, that's why it's so cheap that they can buy it in bulk and then not necessarily show certain episodes. And another thing is, there's a historic link here, because this is something that other science fiction have taken on board. I mean, you only have to look at, well, there's an IO9 list. I won't give you the link because we might be doing it in our collective soon, but, you know, most often seen in science fiction are Leonardo da Vinci, Joan of Arc, Charles Dickens, Queen Victoria, William Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Abraham Lincoln, Richard Nixon, Napoleon Bonaparte. And, of course, famous historic figures that have been in Star Trek, Abraham Lincoln, Genghis Khan, Mark Twain, Albert Einstein, etc., etc. Stephen Hawking still alive, so you can't call him an historic figure. So,
Dave,
yeah.
You also had Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where they went back for
absolutely
to bring them.
Star Trek Voyager, you had Leonardo da Vinci. Of course, in Doctor Who, we've had Charles Dickens. We've had H.G. Wells. We've
Doctor
had
Who
William,
Nixon.
William Shakespeare. We've even had him alluding to, meeting Elvis Presley and all sorts of things. So 2 out of 5, Lynn, with all that. I thought the first part, I didn't see it to the end, because I think it goes slightly daft. Well, some people say it's daft all the way through, but it does definitely go dafter. But I think the outstanding work of Jack Weston makes it at least watchable. I won't watch it again, probably 5 or 10 years, but I sat through it and watched it, and I wouldn't say it was a typical episode. You can get away with one of these per season, I think, but not at the end. I think that was a big mistake.
Yeah.
Back to you.
All right. And what's your rating, Dave?
I gave it 3 times, but I only gave it 2.
2. Okay. All right. And Rick?
Dear Rod Serling, where did you get this wonderful comic writer, this young comic genius? Not. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Rod, you're not funny. Give it up. I understand you were ticked off at the network and stuff like that. I don't know if I think I've said this story. Anybody here familiar with Babylon 5?
Oh, I love that.
Probably
like 5 seasons.
Well, Joe wanted to put in a line, "From the gates of hell I spit at thee." The network goes, "What? Where did you get that from?" And he goes, "Moby Dick? What? The classic novel, Moby Dick? Who? What? Where? What did you guys study in college? Oh, we were MBAs. Oh, that figures." they wouldn't let him use that line because they thought it was offensive.
Hmm.
I don't know about back then. Actually, I think I do. It was a little freer back then because they didn't think they could make money back then off this stupid thing called TV. Not till like the mid-60s, actually, or in later 60s. That they realize, hey, we can make money on this. But, like I said, yes, Dave, there were comic episodes of Star Trek. There were comic episodes of Babylon 5. There were comic episodes of SG-1. Yes. But there's one big difference. Most of them worked. This did not.
Almost like the movie version of Star Trek 5, huh?
Star Trek what?
5. The one that Shatner wrote.
Oh, yeah.
4 was the comedy one about whales.
There'll be whales, Captain!
Yes.
Anyway.
Hello, computer?
Here, you use the mouse. Oh, how quaint.
I'm from Iowa. I just work in space.
But anyway, what else can I say that's been said already? Nothing. I wish we could go negative because I'd give it a negative 20.
Oh, you can if you want to.
Yeah, Felix gave it a negative 1.
Okay, yeah. Negative 5 then.
Negative 5. Hey, Bobby, is that what you give it, a negative 5?
No, I said I gave it a P for pitiful and pathetic.
Oh, that's right. You didn't give it a number. Okay, you gave it a letter.
He went to the letter system. It wasn't worth a numeral.
Doing decimal system there. Okay. All right. Well, that's cool. Okay.
And
Boom.
On that note, I got to go take care of the hellhound.
Oh, that's right. You got to take care of my girl, Daphne. Give her a kiss for me.
I will.
All right. Tell her I love her.
Yep. Bye, guys.
Thanks for coming on, Rick Wall.
Yep.
Bye.
All right, sweetie. Bye-bye. We'll see you on the 1st of March for the first episode of the 5th season.
All right.
Yay.
Yay. All right, honey. Bye-bye. And now, Lou.
Okay. I'm going to side with Dave on this one. I think this episode, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that much about the history of Twilight Zone, but this episode felt like a real, like, F.U. letter to, like, the network. I think it was, like, the last episode. I mean, in a weird way, I don't know if you could have planned for this, but in a weird way, I just felt like this episode was a complete criticism of CBS, of the push to keep the show on the air, and maybe even a criticism of using comedy on The Twilight Zone, although that one I'm a little debatable about. The episode starts with Julius throwing all these pitch ideas to his agent, and it's basically the same story but told differently. And I think that's a criticism of The Twilight Zone and its later incarnation. It's like we're telling the same story with different characters. The whole episode just continued. I think it was this huge criticism towards how the show developed, where it was heading. I think it was a criticism of the move to the one-hour format. I think I remember reading somewhere how Rod Serling wasn't really happy with the idea of moving it to 1 hour because he said the show would end up being more like Playhouse 90 rather than like Twilight Zone.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think this was kind of like his way of saying it, because I think that that production that they were showing was kind of like a Playhouse 90 TV show thing. So I think he was just criticizing that. I think he was criticizing the sponsors of the TV shows, where they have to have product placement and they have to change things to not give the audience ideas. And in that part, I actually kind of enjoyed. I mean, I kind of appreciated it. I mean, I'm not sure if exactly that's like the subtext of the whole episode. That's what I kind of got out of it. That being said, I mean, but that's not really a Twilight Zone episode. That's more like his own little critique of, the whole process that eventually came out. So, and the comedy does fall flat, I think. You're right. The first half hour was pretty bad. For me, it picked up when they're at the rehearsal and you got Burt Reynolds doing a Marlon Brando impersonation and talking about Stanislavski and just all of these things. And then you got the guy who's advertising the show, and he doesn't care about how the show goes. He just wants to make sure that the lighting on the, the lighting shows the name of the brand of the onions that he's selling. It's silly. I'd like to think that Rod Serling, and I think he probably could have been that smart to kind of like write this really, I guess, subversive episode where he's just criticizing the people that are making him do all these things. They made him turn it into a 1 hour show. They're making him rehash old ideas. So looking at it from that point of view, I kind of like enjoyed it. I mean, it was kind of interesting to see. Like I said, I'm not that big into the history of Twilight Zone, so I'm not exactly sure how true what I'm saying is. But that's what I felt about it. Now, admittedly, the show was weak. The comedy was weak. I hated the ending, actually. The ending just seemed to say that, well, this is just what he's going to do for the rest of his life, is just keep rehashing characters from, the past or whatever plot that they want. And, for me, that ending was kind of weak. I don't know. Like I said, I really liked the part in the rehearsal, that whole middle act.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was, it wasn't funny, but it's kind of like, just a little, kind of a, not necessarily a wink to the audience, but kind of like, this is what people like and why? And why are they doing this? You know, the comedy, you know, it was supposed to be silly. He had that cartoon music going on, you know, all the music. I mean, you played the, the Price is Right music when you lose. The wah, 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 wah. So mm-hmm. that's kind of like what this episode did with its music.
I thought the music in this was really bad, though. The music was so ridiculous.
The music it felt like it was cartoon music, you know, where like it just every punchline had to be underscored with like a silly musical phrase. But at least it was deliberate. I didn't feel like the episode was just a mishmash. I think Rod Serling had an idea. Thing is, like I said, it's not a Twilight Zone episode. It really didn't feel like one. But on its own, if it was like an independent episode of something else,
yeah.
I don't think it was great, but I don't think it was that bad. I'd say it was average. So I probably would give it like maybe 2 stars. And also knowing a little bit of the history of the Zone and all the problems it had and all the criticisms that were levied against it, you know, I kind of give it 2 stars because I think this was a deliberate message that Rod Serling was sending. And like
I
said, if he thought this was going to be the last episode of the season and maybe the series, maybe he really wanted to just send a message just kind of like, you know, you screwed me over, so I'm just going to screw you over with this last episode and just criticize you.
Yeah.
So
here to you, executives.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, you know, if that was the goal of the episode, then I think he succeeded. And for that, I kind of, you know, applaud him for it. And I appreciate the episode more. So for that, I give it 2 stars. You know, as a Twilight Zone episode, like I said, I have to subtract the star because it really didn't feel like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah,
but,
it didn't at all.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, that's how I kind of saw it when I was watching it. The humor was flat. It was cool to see Burt Reynolds when he was young doing a silly Marlon Brando impression. But, you know, that
doesn't
hold.
Yeah, it was always cool to see all these actors and actresses in the Twilight Zone before they even became famous, you know, like Robert Redford and all.
Yeah.
You see them and it's like, oh, wow, back when they were nobody, you know.
And there was this one actress, too, that she looked like Bebe Neuwirth to me. And I was like, but that can't be Bebe Neuwirth. It was the female lead in the play. And I don't know who that was. I couldn't find any.
Who?
The female lead in the play? Yeah, I forgot. She was supposed to play Esmeralda or something. I thought she looked a little bit like Bebe Neuwirth to me when I was watching it, but there's no relation. But
I'm not sure who that was.
Yeah. That's just a side note. That's not even really important. It's just...
Yeah.
So for me, I give it 2 stars with the belief that Rod Serling was being deliberate with how he wrote this episode. And, you know, from that point of view, I just give it 2 stars.
Okay, and Sean is just bringing up the fact that, and I was going to bring that up too, but he brought it up first, Judy Strangis, who played Cora, the little girl, she was in that 1970s episode, TV series, Room 222.
And had Karen Valentine in it too.
Karen Valentine, Lloyd Haynes, and Michael Constantine, in Room 222. I remember, I used to watch that. It's a Washington show.
Helen Loomis, she played.
Yeah, Helen Loomis. And, she was much prettier in Room 222. She was really homely in this episode. 69 to 73, Son said. Thank you, Son, for bringing that up. And, and he also mentions that the music in the TV comedies was always bad. And you're right, the music was always bad in the comedies. But Son... he had a big crush on her. One thing, Son, I want to ask you, what is your rating for this episode?
And Ron, too, what's your rating? Ron didn't give us one.
Oh, yeah, Ron.
Yeah. Oh, I had an Agnes Moorehead sighting. She was on the Rifleman today in real heavy makeup.
Who?
Even though you couldn't, Agnes Moorehead.
Oh,
even though you couldn't recognize her, you could recognize her voice because she has that unique voice. She was playing like an 80 or 90 year old woman in the Rifleman.
But she wasn't too attractive, Okay. she really wasn't. Oh, Bear Fan Ron gives us a 1, and Song gives us a 0. Woo! Okay. I'm so glad that you guys were here with us today. We should have today.
Lynn, I have something to add that
yes,
I forgot
what you
to
have
mention. That I forgot to mention in my comments. This episode gets a 6.1 rating at the Internet Movie Database.
Yeah.
And one person in his review wrote the following. This episode cracked me up. It was nice to watch a lighter Twilight Zone, but still have that otherworldly feeling. Keep an eye out for Burt Reynolds. He does a spot-on Marlon Brando impression. It is pretty amazing and very comical. Anyway, if you are looking for a Rod Serling-written episode that makes you think, but also will give you a chuckle, check out The Bard.
Oh, here's my comment.
There you go. Oh, that's pretty bad. Oh, my God. Well, there's no accounting for taste, I'll tell you. Well, okay, that brings us... Yes, Bear Fan Ron says, Brandon impression, just mumble. Yes, it was a mumble. Absolutely horrible. Well, that brings us to the end of Season 4.
Yay!
Season 4. And now... And now we go on to Season 5. And that will be... on Saturday, March 1st. Way, we're going into another month, yes. Saturday, March 1st, good riddance to 4. Yes, someone said good riddance to 4, and you're right. We go into Saturday, March 1st, and our first episode is, yes, as Dave has put up there in the chat room, In Praise of Pip with Jack Klugman, the incomparable, wonderful, fabulous, and dearly missed Jack Klugman. And we will see all of you here, I hope, in 2 weeks, so we can talk about that one. And that also in that episode is Billy Mumy. And, of course, you know that he is kind of a staple in the Twilight Zone. He's been in, Good Life, In Praise of Pip. What is it? Long Distance Call.
And this is both their last episodes too, isn't it? I think Klugman and
yeah.
Him is
yeah.
Him
that's
is their
that's
last
Klugman
one.
And Mumy's last episodes. Yeah, yeah. Klugman was in 4, and Mumy was Mumy in 3 or 4?
He was in Long Distance Call. He was in
A Good Life. It's a good,
a good life.
Life. Praise the Pip.
And Praise the Pip. Yeah, clear back in Season 1, I think. Walking Distance, was it?
Nope, that was Ronnie Howard.
Oh, that was Ronnie Howard. I always get that.
Yeah. I guess he was only in 3. Well, well.
Okay.
Well, it's still worth watching. And, yeah, and so hopefully we will see everybody here. Have a wonderful rest of the weekend, everybody. I'm going to try to get over my cold. I'm almost over it. So I'm going to just get some rest tonight and hope to see all of you back here in 2 weeks. So, oh, and happy, even though it was yesterday, happy Valentine's Day to everybody. Ooh, happy Valentine's Day. You're all my Valentines. Yes, indeed. And a happy one to all of you. Okay, so see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
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 Bye-bye.